Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. Today, I am joined by Paddy Gower. Now, for those who don't know, because we do have some overseas members, Paddy is a beloved son, dear friend. He's an award-winning broadcaster and journalist. He is a keen cyclist, and of course, he is sober. Welcome, Paddy.
Welcome. Thank you, Mrs. D, or Lotta. You forgot to say unemployed. For people that don't realise that the demise of NewsHub and my job is upon us.
Sadly, yes. And,
yeah, you know. Yeah, not sadly. It's a chance for new opportunities.
You know, well, that's right. But, I mean, it is, you know, the state of the media worldwide is a concern. And, yeah, it's a real shame that NewsHub, which has been your home for so long, is going to – I mean, I actually cannot – it's just weird that it's gone.
Yeah, it is weird. It is really weird for me as well, you know. You know, we'll talk a lot about identity and problems and, you know, your own self-identity and your own problems in your life during this chat today. And, you know, a big part of my self-identity was alcohol. A big part is my job and the sorts of things I do. And then, of course, there's, you know, having a crisis in your life, losing your job, you know, and things that might trigger you to want to go back to alcohol. I've been through all of those as well. And I'm just with the way that things are going in New Zealand at the moment, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are watching and listening who are worried about their jobs or have lost their jobs or their partner or their loved one is in that position as well, on top of the reasons they'll be watching this around alcohol as well. So,
well, that's right. And gosh, what a way to test your sobriety muscle going through something really hard, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I'm pleased to say that I got through it. And, of course, the first thing that any organisation does on the day that there's a massive restructuring and everybody loses their jobs, because there's 250 people here out behind me that lost their jobs that day, what's the first thing that people do after all of the announcements and everything? They go to the pub. And everybody went to the Galrace Hotel, which is just up the road here from TV3. Everyone from work went to the pub. And, of course, you know, I wanted to go as well, not to drink, but to be around everyone and debrief, you know. But there's no question. It's like, okay, here we are at the pub and everyone's about to get absolutely blitzed.
And tell me, though, going anyway and being amongst it and having your whatever you had in the glass, lemonade, did you still get that kind of release and camaraderie that moment was about without the alcohol?
Yes, I did. I did. But I think there's no question, there's no point in sugarcoating it as the afternoon, because it wasn't even an evening, because we got fired in the morning and everyone's at the pub by midday. Yeah. As it wore on and the release and the conversations went more into the alcohol, it sort of became harder and harder to be there. But all of us non-drinkers, yourself included, will know what that's like. It sort of feels like things go off a cliff. And
there's always a point where it's like,
and you're still at the top and you're just like, where did everyone go?
You're repeating yourself, your jokes aren't funny, and your breath
So, you know, that happens, and you know, you've got to make a quick exit, and I guess that's the, or you know, you've got to make our exit, and that's the hard point. But yeah, you know, for the initial beginnings of it, that was fine. But you know, where the difference lies is, I think previously, before I was sober, you know, I would have been out all night. I can guarantee, I know what I would have done if I was drinking, and I would have drank all day. And it was on a Wednesday, and I would have drank all night. I would have been one of the last ones out or back at someone's house or wherever we were. I can guarantee it. And then I would have been as hungover as hell on the Thursday, and I might have caught up with some workmates on the Thursday night again for a slight debrief. And then I know for a fact that there was another massive blowout party on the Friday as people sort of came back into it. And I didn't actually go to that. But, you know, I would have been at that. And by Saturday or Sunday, I would have had been drinking off and on for 3 days, and I would have taken 2 or 3 days to recover. And you know, this is the process that would have happened if I was drinking, you know what I mean? Probably would have ended up back at home on Saturday, and it would have been a friend's barbecue or something, and you go around there and there's more alcohol, and all of a sudden you've been drinking alcohol for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and quite a lot of it, and not dealing with this big thing that's happened, which is that you've lost your job. Whereas, of course, I woke up the next morning at 6 a.m. and I was like, right, how am I going to get myself out of this?
Yeah.
And if you out of this in terms of the job loss and the industry exploding and that kind of thing. So if you think about it that way, Lotta, you know, sobriety meant that I was already miles ahead in terms of dealing with the job loss than I would have been when I was drinking, and I would have actually not even got around to thinking about it for about 4 or 5 days once the booze wore off and once the hangovers wore off, and then no doubt stricken with all the anxiety and everything that comes with that. So, you know, from an instance, sobriety has given me more strength to deal with this major mess that's hit my life, really.
Yes, strength, but also, you know, you do have to sit with the discomfort and the temptation. I mean, I get it, and you get it. The alcohol works, right? It does what we want.
Yes.
It would have eased all of that stress and fear, and we have to sit with it in the raw, and it's hard.
Yeah, that's right. But the benefit of that is you sit with it in the raw and you process it 10 times quicker, you know, what's happened to you and how you feel. It's gone straight through your system, and you're just so much more, you've got so much more clarity and life and energy to deal with it. So, but it was awesome to get through something big like a redundancy and the massive amount of drinking that, you know, group drinking that goes with that, or what New Zealanders like to call, you know, a blowout, with quote marks around it, or a well-deserved blowout. You know, everybody had a well-deserved blowout, and they deserved it. You know, good on you. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So, hey, tell me, how long have you been sober for now, Paddy?
Yes, and I knew you were going to ask this question. And I was going to look it up because I was like, I'm terrible with dates, but it's it's 2.5 years. So I came around to your house on December the 18th, it was. I came around to your house on December the 18th at the end of 2022.
Yeah, now let's talk about that for the people who won't have watched. And I will put a link in the intro to this when I put it on the site to the documentary we're talking about, which was, you know, it was a hard watch, but it was a gift, Paddy, because you opened yourself up so beautifully on camera to where you were at right at the end of your drinking days, when you were almost clinging to this, I know this is a problem, but I don't want to stop. And what I thought was so powerful in that documentary was the way that you really illustrated that fear of quitting. And we're chatting now 2.5 years on, and you're talking about the gifts and the discomfort, but the good things. But can we go back to that point? Because I've never actually followed up and said to you, what was it like in those weeks and months following your last drink? Did you have cravings? Was it hard? How did you go initially?
Yeah, so, you know, for people who haven't seen the documentary, I came to your house and that day I never actually drank again after leaving your house. I've never touched alcohol again. And initially I was going to give up for the documentary. I was going to give up for a month or something. That was my kind of plan in the head, and see what happened over a month and, you know, talk about that. And I would have done that from January the 1st because I wanted to get New Year's in, and I would have done a dry January, you know, and you know, I came to your house, and actually moment of clarity is really the term, you know, penny dropped or something happened, and I just thought, I'm going to start that month now. It was helped by the fact that I was horribly hungover, but it was still a really big call to start before Christmas and before New Year's, you know, because as everybody knows, you go and see your family. My dad is there. I drink with my dad. My cousins are there. I drink with my cousins. My brother-in-law is there, you know, all of these sorts of things. And then, of course, New Year's, we all know what happens at New Year's. It's the Olympics of drinking in this country. And I've got sort of 4 decades of gold medals at those Olympics. Okay. So it was a massive call for me to give up and white knuckle it through these hard times.
Yeah.
But something inside of me has said, just do it now. And I didn't realize that I would give up alcohol forever at that point either. I just was like, okay, I'll do my month and I'm going to start now. So I don't know where it came from, but something inside me said, do it. And that wherever that came from, and thanks to people like you and your husband, Corin, and who were talking to me at the time, and my friend Justin, who was making the documentary, were all sort of encouraging me into this direction. Something inside me said, bang, do it. And I seized on that moment. And, it was bloody hard to get through those sorts of things. But I remember vividly waking up after New Year's in particular. Christmas was sort of, I remember I was sober and I was coming out of a big hangover and I was definitely going through some sort of withdrawal symptoms. I was very sluggish. But actually, Christmas helps a lot because you can eat a lot, right? You know, it's all about eating. And actually, eating is a good thing to do when you give up drinking. Just eat like buggery because you need the dopamine and stuff like that. So there was that. But something happened on Christmas Day. You know, I love going to the beach in New Plymouth, Taranaki. I love the beaches there. That's where I grew up. And I love swimming on the beach. And I love swimming on the beach at Christmas Day or whatever. And I was just able to bundle everybody into the car and head down to the beach and have a swim. And I can remember 2 or 3 Christmases before where I was boozed and everyone else was boozed and we ordered a taxi to get everyone and get them in the car and get them down to the beach. And, you know, it just doesn't seem right getting a taxi around to get the family to the beach at Christmas, you know, but I did that, you know, and spend all this money, like, who cares, you've been drinking, let's all go for a swim, it doesn't matter, tell the taxi driver to come back in an hour, all this sort of thing, you know. And that to me, looking back at that's sort of pretty embarrassing, you know. It's like, it's, you know, it's not the crime of the century when it comes to drinking or anything like that, but you know, the kinds of things I've done, but it's very symbolic to me that, you know, I was so boozed on Christmas Day that I couldn't take the family to the beach, you know, and I wanted to go and I did it anyway. But anyway, this Christmas, I drove down to the beach and went for a swim. And of course, going for a swim when you're sober feels a million times better than when you've had a skinful, you know. And that to me was the start of a new journey, really. And then New Year's Eve was the same. I went around to my mate's house around the corner from my house on New Year's Eve, and I had been and I had bought every kind of non-alcoholic drink that existed. I had a potpourri smorgasbord of, you know, probiotic such and such, you know, water, sugar-free, all this sort of stuff. I had a German 0% beer or something that had probably been in the corner of the liquor store for 100 years. You know, so I had everything there. And much like I used to sort of meticulously plot what I'd drink on New Year's, alcohol-wise, right? And I remember I walked around the corner of my mate's house. So this is in the first sort of 10 days. I've got through Christmas and then it's like, okay, now we're going to throw New Year's at you. And I walked around the corner, you know, stinking hot day, perfect for bloody drinking, barbecues on. And I came around the side of my mate's house and all of my other mates were sitting there. And all of them were sitting on top of their chili bins that had their alcohol in it, right? All of these 40 plus guys that had brought their own chili bins around. Mm-hmm. And they were sitting all along the side of the house and they had their beers out. And I walked around and that was the first thing I saw. And I was just like, oh, no, this is, oh, boy, this is going to be hard. You know, boys set up ready to have a good time. And here I am with my chili bin with this sort of thing in there. And, you know, somehow I got through that night as well. I just kept really sort of busy and talking to people and helped on the barbecue. And something that would happen to me when I was drinking would be, I'd actually, especially in those early days, the early few months, I would get really tired without alcohol on a night out. Like really, really tired, which actually helped me a lot because I'd be like, nah, I'm yawning. I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to go to sleep. Anyway, somehow got through New Year's, got away, got out of there, didn't drink. And I woke up the next morning in Wellington. And I just started cycling at that time. And another guy who I was cycling with wanted to go for a ride. And we'd arranged to go for a ride early in the morning. And embarrassingly, I was 45 or 46 years old. And I reckon that was the first time I'd woken up without a hangover on New Year's Day for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee you that. I know for a fact that I've never been sober on New Year's in since I was 15. Mm-hmm. And when I drink a lot. So I'm sure that every New Year's I would have been blotto. And you don't get hangovers when you're young or whatever you think you don't. Of course you do. But anyway, I woke up for the first time in 30 years on the start of a new year without a hangover. And we jumped on our bikes and we rode around the bays, which is into town and around Oriental and all around these beautiful bays in Wellington. And it was a really, really beautiful day. It was a really, really beautiful day.
Magical. And
we stopped and had a coffee as these guys in Lycra do ruined everybody else's coffees at the Chocolate Fish Cafe. So sorry about that. and I just felt amazing.
Wow.
I just felt physically and mentally incredible.
Yeah, like elated almost. And I know that feeling. Yeah. If we could bottle that feeling and sell it, we would be rich.
Everything had just added together. You're sober. You're doing exercise. The weather's nice. It's a new year.
You're not hungover.
You're embarking on this new journey, you know. And I just felt amazing. And I actually made a video and sent it to you and Corin. Because I hadn't updated you. You know, you guys didn't even know that I'd given up drinking. I'd left your house an alcoholic.
And no, we got it at a camping holiday, and we were so stoked.
Because it took a few days for you guys to get back, and I was like, "Hey, what are they doing?" I mean,
we had no Wi-Fi. But hey, so, I want to just ask, because I know, and the people watching this who have had some sobriety time, and they know that wonderful waking up. You know, you never wake up regretting not having had a drink the night before, right? The mornings are just the best. But it can be hard being social, and it can be hard almost changing the way that you are in those environments. And I know you're a big personality and you love interacting with people, and you're describing a guy that's yawning and tired and needing to leave. Was it hard adjusting to being that tired guy leaving the party early?
Really hard. And it's hard, you know, and you also kind of know that people are going to say that as well. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, he's not really as into it anymore. He leaves early. And that you can kind of hear them talking as you get into your car and start. You can imagine what they're saying, whether they're saying it or not, you know. And I'm sure that people do say that. And that is hard. That is hard. And that, you know, it doesn't necessarily change being hard. It's as everyone does, they come up with their own words and their own ways to describe sobriety. And for me, I have chosen these words. I choose to be different. I know now that I am different, and this covers a lot for me. I'm different to the person I was. I'm not the party animal anymore. I'm different to the person I was. I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I'm different to the society around me as well. I have chosen to be different. And I actually like being different. You know, I like being a different kind of personality. So that fits with me. And when I think of my sobriety like that, that gives me a huge amount of inner power. I say I choose to be different. And that's, but yes, for people that are starting, I mean, you know, it is bloody hard to be there yawning away. And, you know, the thing that I found is when I wanted to go, I just want to go. If it's 9:02, 9:04, or 9:15, yeah. Or, you know, I found now I can last a bit longer, actually. But in those early days, I couldn't. And then, you know, and it's not like you want to wait another 10 minutes. It's like, I want to leave now. Yeah. This is over. I want to get out of here. You know,
you were probably catching up on a lot of missed sleep from all those nights. Yeah. You were just, well, the booze was carrying you on, but yeah, you were actually
bone tired. That's right. And, you know, if to talk about the positives, because I think people need to hear the positives. The instant positive for me of giving up alcohol was I started sleeping like a baby from week one. From week one, I started sleeping like a baby after years of crap sleep, okay? Yeah. And I am telling you, if you give up drinking, you will start to sleep like you've never slept before. And that, you know, that came very quickly. I was having very, very deep sleeps from 9 o'clock at night, like I said, and right through, and I was waking up like, whoa, what happened last night? And, you know, I was just like a really deep sleep. And I actually started having something, and this happened a lot in the first few months, particularly on Saturday and Sunday mornings, or if I'd been out the night before at something, I would wake up feeling hungover, okay? So I would wake up and go, oh, jeez, oh, you know, mentally, that was the sort of feeling that I'd have.
Yeah,
and then I'd go, oh, whoa. You're not hungover.
Oh, funny.
You're not hungover, Patty. You haven't drunk. You haven't drunk.
Because you were so used to it.
You haven't drunk for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. You are not hungover. You were in bed, walked out at 9:57. You've had 8 hours, 9 hours quality sleep.
How interesting.
So I was having, Lotta, phantom hangovers.
Phantom hangovers for like a minute until you realised.
Yeah, for 30 seconds to a minute until I mentally realized and told myself, you're not hungover. Actually, the opposite. You feel fantastic. Get outside and go for a bike ride, a walk. Go and have a nice breakfast. Go do something.
Yes, there's nothing to feel bad about physically.
There's no anxiety. You know, go out and embrace the world. So, but that showed me that my body was so psychologically used to thrashing itself every weekend that mentally my mind thought that I was hungover because I've been, you know, it was literally my mind playing tricks on me.
Yeah, crazy. Do you have drinking dreams?
No, I've never had drinking dreams of where I've like woken up and going, God, I got drunk last night. And,
yeah,
okay. But I'm sure that's a similar sort of thing to this. This is my version of drinking dreams was that I would wake up and feel hungover.
But it's like your subconscious catching up with your reality, which is don't do that anymore.
Yeah. And then as time has gone on, actually 2.5 years in, I don't get as tired as I did initially in those early days. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
But you know, those were sorts of early sorts of moments where I kind of just had to white knuckle it through these events. And yeah, I mean, they're not great. I mean, you know, I went to a wedding pretty early on as well. And I think anyone, you know, New Zealand weddings are probably the heaviest drinking session that you can sort of see. And, you know, they're hard as well to get through, you know, and you've got to wait for everybody and you're sort of...
I had trial by wedding in my first year of sobriety. I think I had 5.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But now I love weddings because, for one, it's like a great show. And two, it's one of the few times where you can have a dance. Right? As a sober person.
yes, right. You can just sort of sneak out there.
With the aunties.
Of course, for a Kiwi male, dancing sober, I'm still getting to grips with that.
No, we'll get you there.
That's sort of viewed as, you know, for a Kiwi guy, dancing sober is sort of viewed as just the biggest no-no. You know, it's like farting in church. You know,
you can get over that.
Yeah, we'll yeah, yeah,
I just wanted to ask you, so we did an event recently, you, me and Guy and Espina, and I'll put the link because I don't know if you're aware, but the audio of that chat we did in Wanaka is available on YouTube now.
Oh, great. That's fantastic.
So I'll put a link to that in this piece as well. But in that, you said something I thought was quite interesting. You said that you don't talk a lot about your sobriety. And obviously, we're so grateful for you being here with me at Living Sober. But is that true? Do you, as you move around your life and you're doing a lot of filming, interacting, events, meeting people, are you keeping it quiet intentionally, or does it just not come up? How's that going for you? Because you are a public figure.
I think, you know, because I'm public a lot through the nature of my work and everything, and I sort of made the decision that I didn't want to be, and this is no offense to yourself or anyone who does this work, but I just made the decision that for myself, I didn't want to be Mr. Hashtag Sober. And everywhere I went, people would want to ask me about it, or everywhere I went, I would talk about it or force it down people's throats or whatever, because I kind of think that then it lacks a bit of, it is, drinking is part of someone's private life, and I don't want to sort of jump into people's private lives and say, hey, everything you're doing is wrong and I know the right way and all of this sort of thing, do you know what I mean? And have that kind of
attitude.
So I've been relatively careful in what I say, but I do talk about it like I am talking about now, or when I'm in Wanaka. When I'm asked, I will go and talk about it, and you've seen me talk there, and people will see me talk here, and I will speak honestly because I know that there are people who want to hear this. I just didn't want to be someone that I feel that actually, if you tried to force it down Kiwi's throats and sort of bring it up everywhere you went, actually you would get kind of nowhere in this country eventually. You know, at the moment we're speaking to people who really want to hear our message. In Wanaka, we're speaking to people who want to come and hear our message, you know. Some of them didn't really, you know, because they've probably been on the booze the night before. But that's it. But I think, you know, this is part of choosing to be different, is that you have to accept that you are different, and that New Zealand is going off on a different sort of booze fueled journey to yourself. And you don't want to sort of wreck that for people because they won't want to listen to you.
Yeah, I really respect that. And I think it's right, Patty. And I think there's a line between, and you're right, you don't have to do it. And why should you? And there is a line between, you know, being honest about it and making people feel uncomfortable. And I try and tread that line really carefully myself, because I don't want to make people bad for drinking alcohol. If you want to drink alcohol, drink alcohol. If you have a little internal voice, is what I always say, that's worried, maybe investigate it, listen to some people, whatever, but that's your, only you know the truth. So, yeah, I totally respect where you're coming from.
Yeah, so, you know, I just, it's not like I censor myself, you know what I mean? You know, I am careful not to shove it down people's throats, because I feel that then I might lose some of the power of the communication that I can have at times. And I tell you something, I know a lot about talking to people in New Zealand and how New Zealanders react. I know a lot about it. And I can tell you right now, when I speak about alcohol, I can feel the people in the room listening. When I talk about it, it is probably the most single powerful topic that I can speak about. And the reason for that is there are so many people when you're in rooms that want to hear what you've got to say about it, and that are worried and that are uncomfortable. And you can literally, you know, when you say things like, you know, when I say I'm an alcoholic or I was an alcoholic, you know, it's like, whoa, you know, you can feel the room drop. And everywhere I go, people want to know, are you still sober? How long have you been going for? Do you know what I mean? So it's out there, but it is suppressed.
You're not leading with it.
Yeah, and keep down. But people will always come up and want to know. And it's important that, you know, people like yourself and like me are there so that people know, hey, it can be done. And I say to people, hey, man, I was one of the biggest pissheads out there. If I can do it, anybody can. And obviously that, I never want people to think that it's been easy, you know, because it's not easy. It's really hard. And I know that people are hard at it. It took me a long time to understand addiction, full stop. And I know that there are people watching this who are addicted to something, and I know what it's like to have an addiction. And embarrassingly, I used to look at people and who with addiction and think that they were weak. I would be like, why don't you just give up? You've got a problem with booze, or you're on the pee, or you're addicted to smoking. You know, my mother was addicted to smoking. And it would be like, you're weak. Why don't you just stop? You know, and that included people with alcohol, even though I was actually an alcohol addict myself. I didn't actually see that myself. So sort of two things happened for me. You know, addiction is a disease. There is nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be ashamed of for being addicted to something. Absolutely nothing. It is something, society has created this weird thing around addiction. And actually, if you just, I say to anyone, just do not be ashamed of that word or anything. Just don't be ashamed of it. You know, I'm not ashamed to be an addict. And I think once I started to understand that, not just about myself, but about other people, that addiction was something that we should accept and help people with, you know, that started to change things for me. And then, of course, I realized that I too was, I was an addict as well. And that helped me to deal with it. But, you know, it's such a weird thing that I didn't even view myself as one.
It's so interesting when you're on the inside of it, though, isn't it? It's really
And the other really big thing for me was, you know, we've talked a lot about the practicalities of giving up drinking, which are really important. You know, the practicalities are really important. But for me, the psychology's been really important. And for me, you know, unpacking, and that's a kind of a word, you know. Yeah, unpacking is one word for it, but just figuring out myself and why I drank, and it was just really simple. I was really ashamed and embarrassed of the way that I looked when I was growing up. I had buck teeth, acne, big nose, oily skin, skinny, short, you know, and braces and all of this sort of thing. And right into my adult life when I was on TV, people would call me ugly and all this sort of stuff. And actually, at some point in my life, I got over all of that, and it was never really sort of part of me or how I felt or anything. But from when I was young, I would use alcohol to get over that. Basically, I'd use alcohol to talk to girls at parties, or alcohol to escape that feeling, or alcohol to give me confidence or whatever. And as soon as I sort of realized, oh, yeah, you've used alcohol to get over these feelings about your looks and all of that, but you don't actually really feel that anymore, yet you're still got the crutch of alcohol for something that you don't need it for, and now you've just got it for a problem. That also really helped me to go, fuck, sorry about my language, Mrs. D, to go, fuck, what are you doing, mate? What are you doing? You know, and I know that might sound really deep to people who are just trying to figure out ways to get up and give up and just trying to get through the wedding this weekend or get through tonight when the kids go to bed or whatever. I know that might sound deep but this is just the truth for me. You know, this is how I've got through these things. And for me, the mental side of things, and it doesn't necessarily mean going to a psychologist or anything like that, but for me, just unpacking those mental things and then just going, hey, fuck, this is the whole lot of reasons that you've got this are just absolute bullshit, you know, this problem with alcohol, that helped me start to really move on as well, you know, and made me just even stronger as a human being. Because, you know, all of this sort of stuff's now well and truly in my past, and it's just meant that I have, you know, taken on my demons and won. And that makes me just an incredibly different person.
Oh, Paddy. I'm so happy you got sober. And I just think of the you that was 2.5 years ago in my kitchen, and that scene with you in that flat, and that lost guy, that lost boozy guy. And that look in your eye of kind of yeah, just it's lost and desperate. It's cliches, but and now I'm just so happy you did it. Great job. And also thank you so much. And I totally respect what the level at which you share. I mean, what you're doing, just being normal about it, is so great. And I'm just so grateful that you're in this space now of calling truth to alcohol for the people who want to look at their relationship with this drug. So look, just a big thank you from me. Love chatting with you. Come back again, maybe in another year or two.
Yes. Yeah.
And just keep the great work, because every year, so I'm 12 years sober now, and every year I look back and go, shit, that was the most revealing year yet. It just keeps unfolding.
Yeah. And I'd just say to anyone, I'm 2.5 years sober. I chose to be different. I still choose to be different. It's up to you. But if you choose to be different as well, you'll never regret it.
Mic drop. All right. Thank you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you. See you soon. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay.